Blog Talk Radio.
That it is time for drive-through HR. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Drive-Through HR. My name is Robin Schooling. I'm one of the hosts, and I'm playing solo host today. So it will be just me and my guest. It is Monday, June 29th, and we are here celebrating O Canada Week. So we are doing a show a day this week because, for folks who don't know, Wednesday, July 1st, is actually Canada Day. So this is our time. Since the drive-through HR studios are based in the U.S., this is a purposeful expansion of our borders this week to talk to our wonderful friends to the north. So let me welcome our very first guest. A returning guest, a longtime friend and family member, really, of Drive-Thru HR, our first Canadian guest of the week, Bonnie Tittgemeier. Bonnie!
Hello.
Hello!
So good to have you on. Welcome back to the Drive-Thru.
I know. You know, you and I see each other at least once or twice a year, and it's now been a year,
mm-hmm.
So it's good to at least talk to you live.
I know. It's what we've got right now, right?
Exactly.
At least we've got virtual to hang out with each other. So let's do this. Before we dive into the guts of our show, I want to have you let our listeners know, for those who aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell our listeners who you are, what you do, where you are. All that good stuff.
Okay. Well, I've been in HR, this is just terrible, but since June 1, 30 years. I had a big 30-year recognition this year for that. And virtually all in consulting. I have had some stints where I've gone inside, essentially, maybe not with a client, but with the firm that I'm with, I might have gone
yeah.
to manage the people inside too. But like all consulting, and I don't know how many HR folks say that because a lot of people start
mm-hmm.
in the business and go out to consulting
mm-hmm.
later. But I got very fortunate that my first HR job was with a downtown Toronto law firm and doing compensation and employment standard compliance kind of consulting. And then
yep.
that eventually spread into a lot of different things. With today, the two areas that I spend the most time in are transactions. So when companies buy or sell, I typically, and again, that's my legal connection to HR, but
yep.
When companies primarily are selling, they need some help on understanding what they're buying, or if they've made the decision to purchase, now they got to bring everybody together. What are the mechanics of doing that?
Yeah.
And I play the middle person in ensuring that the paperwork gets drafted, that the implementation is going to go the way the parties really wanted it to. So
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
a primary area. And then the other area is compensation, which
mm-hmm.
takes a lot of different forms here in Canada, from just, you know, your standard, well, let's start to develop pay policy, to, you know, rule compliance related things, because we have more laws than in the U.S. about how you're supposed to pay people. So I do that kind of work too.
And there's there are differing standards and or laws and or regulations from province to province as well, correct?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I joke because when people on the American side hear me speak, they go, she's not Canadian. She sounds like she's from Wisconsin, right? Sorry. I haven't lived in Canada all my life, but yes, where things are federal with like wage and hour in the U.S., it starts in a province, like the provincial rules. Employment is governed primarily at a provincial level. So yes, and they all have their own unique things that they capture in legislation for sure.
Well, see, you know when we can tell you're Canadian is, or we get the Canadian flavor is when you, when you enunciate the O's, right?
Yeah.
That's my Canadian tell always, you know, a boot and process.
Yeah,
and,
well,
you know.
The thing, that's the thing, and that's what most friends will say that they know, like my friends from high school and stuff will know,
right.
Because I say process and project. And you know, like that just doesn't, and that doesn't compute for them. Anyway.
You know where I pick it up all the time, especially because I'm such a fan of like the HGTV and DIY building shows and buying houses and that, and so many of them are Canadian export shows that we get.
Right.
And so everybody has the Canadian accent. That's where I like really get my fill. So, before we dive, deep into kind of what we want to talk about today, which is compensation and kind of some things that are top of mind right now. What is, in honor of O Canada Week, what is one of the best things that you would say? What's one of your favorite things about Canada?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, one of the suggestions was that, you know, I keep it to one thing, and my standard pat answer is typically about diversity and inclusion and just how much more open it is here to a breadth of, you know, like here in the Greater Toronto area, 50% of the people who are here weren't born here. They were born someplace else.
Wow.
And yeah, so, you know, that lends itself to a different mindset in the workforce for sure.
Yes.
However, I mean, I think the last 30 days and our worldview of the fact that maybe even in Canada, we don't have it right. I think we actually still have more work to do on diversity and inclusion. So I'd actually flip it and say that I really appreciate how much people here appreciate environment, you know, and I'm a very outdoor person, you know, like I hike everywhere and I do that sort of stuff. And I'm privileged to be in a place where there's so much natural beauty, but I'd even say there's great concern about internal like environment, whether that's mental health, or the workplace that you, your home office, like your workspace, people are concerned about ensuring that's conducive to productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think we in the U.S. are a bit behind some of that thinking or contemplating some of those things as a collective.
Right.
We don't really dive into that. Very interesting. Very interesting. So speaking of the workplace, you know, when we said let's get together and let's have a chat on the air, the one thing we came up with is compensation and compensation design. And, you know, as you mentioned, to our listeners, that is something that you for years have focused on and worked on. What sorts of questions or issues have arisen now kind of you know, post-COVID or knee-deep in COVID as it is, you know, what are business owners, what are HR professionals, what are the colleagues that you work with bringing up around in regards to compensation?
So the first one, and I literally get this question regularly, is when are we going to know if the market has moved? And some of that has to do with a lot of, you know, Facebook putting out there about if you're going to work from home, maybe there's going to be a reduction in pay. Like there's just been a lot of uncertainty, and profit margins have changed. You know, there are some that are doing much, much better than they ever would have imagined. And then there are those that really, this has forced them, you know, to a brink that they couldn't have even imagined 4 months ago. And so, and the traditional salary survey business, the houses and stuff, the timing of their surveys doesn't fit what happened in the world, right? And so, like, really being able to shake out and say, are we actually talking about differences in the pay strategy, the compensation stuff? Like, when are we going to know that is a really popular question. And I think that's just the anxiety about how much change there is out there. And during COVID, too, a very popular question was, you know, can we do salary reductions? You know, there mm-hmm. people hold what they have, particularly around base salary, pretty dear. And here you always have to worry about constructive dismissal and those sorts of things. By the way, constructive dismissal means different things in different countries. And constructive dismissal is a very bad thing in Canada. It's not a good thing. There's been those kinds of concerns about salary reductions, and people in there's so much that comes into play with that. Do you have language in your employment agreements that would allow for such a thing? Like, have you been clear about that in the beginning? Have you been clear about that in policy? How long is this going to go on? Is it a reasonable expectation in the circumstances? And also there have been government supports through COVID here in Canada. And if you're receiving those, like, how does that impact how much you're able to provide in terms of compensation? So there's that's definitely, though, the issue of can we do it and for how long can we do it comes out. In discussion. Another question would be, you know, can we or should we change our offering? Canada is a very base pay centric culture. That doesn't mean that we don't have bonus plans, and it doesn't mean we have team structures and incentive plans and commissions. It's not like those things don't exist. They very much exist. And they exist more than they did 20 years ago, for sure. But part of the recovery strategy, organizations are starting to ask, should we be changing what we're doing? And should that be more about the team versus the individual? That's actually, you know, a common question as well. And there are organizations out there that as soon as this hit, it was in the middle of their overall comp discussions anyway. And so they're working on that sort of thing. And unlike in the U.S., I mean, the whole benefit thing is very different than it is south of the border. The amount that benefits cost to the employer is, you know, quite a bit smaller than it is to a U.S. employer. And so, but in the last, right up until COVID, I get involved in benefit renewals, and like everybody was experiencing big adjustments. to the point of we did some benefit surveys with some of our clients to try to understand what people would prefer. Like, do they want a smaller plan that they don't pay for, or are they willing to kick in something where they traditionally hadn't kicked anything in?
Yeah.
And you know, and got some mixed results on that. And then on top of it, with COVID, then nobody could go to the dentist, right? And nobody could go nobody could go get their massage therapy or their physiotherapy or any of those things. And so the benefit organizations started coming back with these big reductions. But the question will be, once things get back to normal and you're fully able to access all the services, will that be something that the costs will be different? And what kind of decisions will you have to make if that starts to eat into your ability to provide them?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, one of the one of the sad realities here in the States with the number of people laid off, their positions being cut and that sort of thing, if they were in an organization where they had employer-sponsored health coverage, because not all of them did, of course, but, you know, our safety net, I'm using air quotes if you could see me, because it's really kind of a crappy safety net, but our safety net is COBRA, right? So, oh, we're letting you go, you know, or your position's being eliminated, but you can carry on your health, your employer's plan health insurance. You're just going to pay the entire premium yourself. And so that became very, you know, some people have gone through that scenario in the past. You know, they left a company and they got a COBRA notification, but maybe they didn't need to think about it because they were going to another job with another health plan. But all of a sudden we had, you know, millions of people being faced with, okay, you're unemployed, and if you want continued health coverage, guess what? You get to pay the entire premium, which could be, you know, thousands of dollars a month just for the coverage, let alone with what your co-pays or out-of-pockets or whatnot are going to be. And I think it was just very it was very eye-opening. And yes, there's a lot of employers that work to kind of internally educate their employees that this is part of your compensation, and every month the employer is spending, you know, X thousands of dollars on you. But the reality is employees don't pay attention to that. Nobody really pays attention to that until they're faced with, here's the premium if you want it. And I don't know, you know, the always look on the bright side, be positive so that we don't, you know, think everything's going to end. But my positive outlook is this will have opened up, hopefully, a very real conversation with us in this country around healthcare, not right now while we're living in it, but on the other side of it, because I think it's more and more people will have experienced the lack of coverage and the lack of affordable options. And I just read something this morning that some drug maker, I couldn't tell you who they are, is close to getting like FDA approval, or maybe has gotten the FDA approval for a drug that can somebody who tests positive, this drug can minimize their risk and will make them recover much quicker and whatnot. But to take this is like, it's like $4,000 or something.
Right.
So it's available, or potentially will be available soon. But that would be an out-of-pocket cost, probably.
I know.
And that's the
interesting, I mean, you know, for all the, you'll hear the Canadians all rave about healthcare because it is great. But one of the things that is not so good in a COVID world where there may be fewer people who can participate in an employer-based plan for what we might call the extras, but they're really essentials, is, you know, the price of drugs has gone up so much that, and as a cost management thing, the provinces, many of the provinces have pushed some of the really expensive treatments to home base, so they're not in the hospital, so they're like chemo and that sort of thing. And so if you don't have a plan, that can be that can be out of reach for you. So there will be those conversations about how we manage that, because they can't offset everything, and they can't put all that pressure on an employer plan, or they'll start to feel like U.S. plans, and employers will choose not to have them in favor of something else. So
Well, let me do a quick reset. We are we're about 20 minutes in, so we're sitting at about 10 minutes left. Because this show goes fast and furious. So we are here with our guest Bonnie Titkemeyer during celebrating O Canada Week. She's based out of Toronto, and we're talking compensation, comp design, and some related organizational things. So let me ask you this one, Bonnie. What, in the U.S. and, well, really globally, because I've seen it talked about in the U.K. and whatnot as well, there's more and more conversations starting to happen about, listen to me, I think I said about kind of like a Canadian. there's conversations happening that, you know, hey, if we decide to let our workforce work remotely or work from anywhere, you know, forever, ongoing, we're going to have different pay scales. Facebook came out saying that, that they're going to have differing pay scales, different pay based on geography. Has that arisen for you in the past? Is it coming up more now? And what do you think about that?
So I've never seen, prior to COVID, any Canadian conversation about, well, the people who work from home, we're going to put them on a different or lower pay scale. In part because there are expenses associated with working from home. And usually they have to live in within a region that allows them to travel to wherever the office is for something or another. So that issue didn't really, like in my radar, that didn't really come up. But what I think is going to be like the resetting of compensation for remote people, and where I think in part some of the organizations are getting that 16% has to do with things like car allowance, right? If you're not driving, if you're not driving anymore, but that was part of your compensation, how do you, like, I think some of that's going to get lost, per se, or some of those home office expenses, those things may disappear in favor of just, you know, maintenance of the particular range. And I don't know how that's going to fare it out globally, but here, I mean, Canada is, like, one really surprising thing about Canada is that it's a very urban workforce. You know, like there's you take planes between cities, right? There's not a lot of rural areas per se.
Yeah.
And so the expectation is that people will be close to the office, like it'll be manageable. And if they happen to then set up their work from home from the cottage, then they're probably going to have a tiny little condo somewhere downtown so they can go to meetings, right?
Okay.
Like I think that's possibly the way we're going to go on that.
Yeah. Whereas here the conversations are starting to be, okay, maybe I have lived in San Francisco because that's where, you know, my tech job is, you know, and they want me in the office and I have to be at that at that office or go into it a couple times a week or whatever. But now, since my company is going 100% remote, I can ditch the massive amount of rent I have to pay in San Francisco, and I can go to, you know, BFE, middle of the country, live in a small town, be close to family, not have the hassles, and buy a big house for what I paid for rent in San Francisco. And so then that part of the conversation becomes, well, you're doing the same job, so do we pay you the same, even though you can live like a king in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country? You know, so that's where that part of that conversation is. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
For sure.
Because, you know, what do you do if, you know, you have three people, you know, sort of all same position, same, you know, same general comp, same job, all working in San Francisco, and they go 100% remote. Two decide to stay there, one decides to leave and go live elsewhere. But, you know, should that one person's base pay be cut down? You know, that's where the questions are going to come. Some say yes, some say no. So it'll be interesting to see that. We are getting close. Got time for one more question. So kind of a short quick one here. But what are any of the dangers that you see, whether legal or kind of moral, you know, engagement sort of issues, if an employer makes drastic changes to its comp structure because of COVID? They freeze pay, they bring back pay, you know, dial it back down, stop bonuses. What should an employer think about before they do something if they don't have to?
Well, I mean, I think the first is always to really check whether or not you have a legal issue. And some of that is about how it's worded. And and I say that assuming that any kind of reduction isn't going to go below a minimum employment standard, which, of course, you couldn't do.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a moral/societal issue more than anything. Organizations that can afford it and still take the reduction are going to be publicly shamed. I mean, there's no question about that. And we will return to an environment where employees choose who they work for. And the internet has a long memory. So if you treated your employees bad through this when you didn't need to, I think you're asking for a trouble down the road. For sure.
Yeah. 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 The public is the public square is large and yes, non-forgiving or and doesn't forget. So that is true. Well, we are just about out of time, Bonnie. So before we wrap up, please let our listeners know where they can find you online, LinkedIn, your website, etc.
So on LinkedIn, it's Bonnie Tischmeyer. I think it's the world's funniest spelling name. So I would look at it and then look that up. But I am on LinkedIn. The employerschoice.com is my website. And you can find me on Twitter at Bonnie Toronto.
Yep. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Fabulous kickoff to O Canada Week with one of my absolute favorite Canadians. So thank you, everybody,
for
listening to Drive Through HR. Bye, Bonnie.
Bye-bye.